Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everyone? Happy Monday. Hopefully you had a good football weekend. Yeah, I know there's other sports, but who talks about too much of anything else on a Monday after football Sunday and Saturday? That's right, you're in the Cave Show. This is PLR. Hopefully everyone is having a good day today. I don't know if you're in the Phoenix area or not, but if you are, it is absolutely beautiful. So I hope your day is likewise. Like I said, this is the Cave Show. This is PLR. And, of course, we're brought to you by the one and only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chandler Heights. Best selection of cigars in the valley. Make sure you get in there and let them know that PLR sent you from the Cave Show. They will take 10% off of any cigar purchase that you have. That's Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Also, you can become a club member. Get a locker that backs up to a humidor. And that way you don't have to carry your stuff around with you. You don't have to worry about having a humidor at home. You can leave everything there. Come down, get your cigar. They do have the NFL League Pass ticket, so you can sit there and relax and watch one of their 11 televisions. They do stay open late on Mondays, Thursdays for the games, and the Sunday night games, so make it your football headquarters. Well, today is a special day because I have the one and only, my brother Ed Smith, on with me, former NFL, former MLB star. So without further ado, I completely forgot the royalty music, so I hope I am forgiven. One and only Ed Smith. What's up, bro? How you doing today?
What's going on, brother Paul? Happy Monday to you, man.
You know, I don't know, Ed, but you tell me. With football back, why do Mondays seem better?
Well, you know, we're coming down off that high of the weekend. You know, the Saturday all day football, college football, and then you get all the buffet of NFL football, and then we still got one more left tonight. You know, so it's like. You have something to look forward to. During the off season, you know, it's just a regular old day, nothing really to do in the evening. But, you know, we look forward to those Monday night games, even though some of the matchups aren't the greatest. But, you know, it's still football. Football, for you know how they say a good day of golfing beats a bad day, or no, a bad day of golf beats a good day of work any day. It's almost the same thing. A bad day of football beats a good day of nothing every day, any day. So.
You ain't lying about that. Well, listen, I do want to start with the Cardinals. I know we were texting back and forth during that game. And, you played the game, so you know the game better than me. But I'm going to tell you something. Carson Palmer, I'm not betting on the Cardinals going too far because he really is looking like an old quarterback right now.
Yeah, it's funny how fast that happens, too, doesn't it, Paul? I mean, you know, you would think, you know, he had a decent year the year before, you know, slid off a little bit last year, but you're expecting him to get back up, you know, to the level he has been at. And it just, he's like a shell of himself right now. And I'll say another thing, it looks like Father Time has caught up with Larry Fitzgerald a little bit, too. Not a lot of separation out there, and you don't get that feeling of that spark, you know, that he can provide. So, the two of them being the kind of the leaders with Johnson going down, it does not look, you know, it seems really early in the season to be talking about, you know, how bad things kind of look. So it might turn out to be a real long year out here in Arizona.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it's no matter who you are, it seems like, except for Tom Brady, it seems like Father Time catches up with everyone eventually. And in fairness to even that statement, I think when you get to a certain age, I think you have it still. I just don't think you have it as consistently. Like, I still think Tom Brady has it. But there are spots where he's not making throws that he would have made, you know, 5, 10 years ago. It's everybody. No one is picking on anyone. But sometimes you just can't do it as consistently. You can still do it. I mean, the touchdown pass that Carson Palmer threw was a beautiful pass. But then there were some really bad passes. And I just think that Time catches you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as us in regular life too. I mean, think about the things you and I used to be able to do, you know, consistently. You know, I remember back in the day, man, I'd get out there and hoop and run up and down the court and stuff. And it, like, at some point it catches up with every single one of us and is obviously magnified out there on the field because we can look back on, you know, year to year some of these performances. And you can tell, like you bring up with Carson Palmer, you know, he looks like he is just, you know, his reactions are a step slow. He might still have the same arm quality in his arm, but his reactions and reading and, you know, coming off a receiver and getting to the next one, those are the things that start to slow on you. And you know how fast things move in the NFL. All it takes is a split second delay in your, you know, decision making, and you're either getting knocked upside your head or you're throwing into a coverage that you didn't see was there or something like that. So it's one of those things, man. It's just and sometimes it's really sad to see. You know, you and I are old enough. We've seen some of our favorite athletes. And, you know, for instance, me and you with Michael Jordan, his Wizards days, you know, that was sad to see. You know, but it's inevitable. There's nobody who has defeated Father Time, and I don't think anybody ever will.
Did Michael Jordan play for the Wizards? I don't remember that at all.
you blocked that from your memory.
the last thing I remember was Sam playing for the Bulls, hitting a winning shot against Utah. I'm going to have to go back and look that up.
I must be thinking about some other, not Michael Jeffrey Jordan, Michael Jimmy Jordan, I think it was this other dude.
I'm trying to remember. I'll think about it, but I'll go back and look. But I think what got me this week, though, Ed, with the Cardinals was, and when you look in the win-loss column, it doesn't matter at the end of the year who you beat if you get in the playoffs. If you win, you win. But something tells me you shouldn't struggle against a team who's starting a quarterback that's been there for a little over a week. That's when you go in. And with or without your best player, David Johnson, you should have been able offensively to put a little bit more pressure on him.
You look at what happened to Indianapolis out in L.A. last week, and I was thinking right along the same lines. I thought this was going to be a massacre. They're going to be mad how they played against Detroit, lost that game. They're going to come out there fired up. Like you said, a quarterback who's literally been with the organization a couple weeks. You know, they benched the second string guy. This is the third string guy. And I'm thinking they're going to go over there and mop them up. And they looked – I mean, now, here's the thing. The defense, they looked halfway decent. They're holding opponents to 13. You know, they held Indy to 13 points or whatever it was. But the offense, they got shredded out there by the L.A. Rams. And then you come back and let them look like they, you know, like they're the 84 Bears. It was crazy. I'm not necessarily saying that Indianapolis was, you know, great defensively, but I guess that just shows how bad you were offensively. If that was the best you could muster up, you know, basically almost losing that game, if not for, you know, a couple breaks here and there. There's no excuse for that. I don't know what the formula is or what's going wrong, but they've got a lot of work to do with Dallas coming in here next week.
And I'm glad you said that because we're talking about a Dallas team that's going to be pissed off after the performance they had yesterday against Denver, where they just got shellacked. I mean, I said last week, whoever's at home wins the game. So if they were in Dallas, I think Dallas would have won. If they're in Denver, obviously Denver won. But Denver didn't just win. Denver scored a touchdown in every single quarter and two touchdowns each in the second quarter and the third quarter. So they just put it on Dallas. And, I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, 8 rushes, 9 yards. Everything with Dallas seemed out of whack.
Well, it all started with the coaching and the game plan. On the field, obviously, you know, you worked on something all week, but that game was a tribute, showed me, if nothing else, the brilliance of somebody like a Belichick, because adjustments are the biggest part of the NFL, meaning from series to series, sometime, you know, play to play. But definitely you don't go a whole game with a game plan. We're going to run in, this is what we're going to do. And then you're seeing it's not working, but you're still going to stay with it. That showed me that, you know, they had no backup plan and they had no, like, second, like, A, plan A, B, plan B, and C. They went in there and Denver, you know, hit them in the mouth, and all they did was just stick their chin out and ask for another all through the game rather than, you know, hey, Maybe we might have to bob a little bit, weave a little bit, maybe pull a couple of our trick plays out of the bag, do something to get a running game to spark our passing game or vice versa, whatever it was. The crazy part was they had that little delay, weather delay. They had an extra hour in between going out there and seeing what Denver was trying to do to them. And I guess they just all went, like Dallas just went in and sat down and said, hey, let's have some Gatorade and some oranges. We don't really have anything to work on. We can go do what we did, you know, been doing. Meanwhile, Denver, like I said, it was plain as day to me. Now, I also fault the players because you have to execute and win battles. They got out-coached. They got out-battled all through the game, punched in the mouth. And then you saw how at one point Ezekiel Elliott on the interception, he pretty much just gave up. And to me, if I'm on that team and I see somebody do something like that, we got to have a coming to Jesus meeting as a team because that's totally unacceptable. You never do that.
Yeah, I did see that, and I was like, even if you know you're not going to get to him, at least put forth the fake run. You know what I mean? Turn and then start to run down and feel it looks like you can catch. But I couldn't believe we just stood there. But plus, you never know what happens. He's a running back. You never know if that cornerback is going to try to go side to side, do any types of reverse. You could come up from behind and possibly do something. Dallas just didn't seem like they were in that game from the beginning. And it seemed like once Ezekiel didn't have a good start, that defense, honestly, is terrible when they can't run the ball. I've never seen a defense so suspect in my life when the offense isn't controlling the clock. And it seems like they gave up, too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was a total tip. I mean, I had to be a long flight heading back to Dallas, especially with Jerry running his mouth probably on the plane. But, I can imagine a whole lot of people got – their booties dug into because of that, like one, game plan and effort. Those are two. Like I said, and you've heard this 1,000 times, you can't coach. You should never have to coach effort. I mean, even if we're getting our tails beat in, everybody should be out there giving it everything they got. Sometimes you just run into the buzzsaw, but if you give me everything you got, and I've had several coaches, you know, in losing efforts tell us, look, man, we went out there and we fought and we competed and we came up short, but I'm proud of what you guys left on the field. You can't say that about what Dallas did. And like you said, Paul, you could look, and there was a couple times they caught Elliott on the bench, and he was almost like a pouty child because things weren't going his way. And, you know, you didn't see fire in his eyes like, hey, let's get this going. Let's, you know, getting up, trying to get the linemen. You know, hey, we got to do this. He was just sitting there like, why is everybody picking on me today? You know, that type of thing. And,
yeah.
You know, like I said, that showed me a ton right there, a bunch of front runners in that locker room and on that field, that could come back to haunt them because obviously the formula is out there for what Denver did. The problem is everybody doesn't have Denver's defense and their athletes on that side of the ball, but there are going to be teams who try to replicate that, and they could be in for some, you know, some long weekends come the rest of the season.
I ask you a quick question because I've been hearing this a lot today, and I really stopped and I thought about it. Is Dez Bryant a top 5 wide receiver?
I would like. Unfortunately, I don't think he is anymore. He's lost his burst and his separation, and I say that reluctantly because I actually have him on a couple of my fantasy football teams. I was expecting, you know, I was expecting old Dez, but you look out there, and even like with the week one as well, Dez is not separating anymore, and he's never been. And I've listened to a lot of the, you know, the talking heads talk about him. He's never been one of those guys like a Jerry Rice that could stop on a dime and run pristine routes. And, you know, his movements and the hips and everything were all in sync. He was one of those dudes that basically just kind of out-muscled you and out, you know, he might have a burst and maybe out-jumped you and stuff like that. He's lost that. He can't separate. And, you know, the hands have never been what you call A-plus hands. So now, you know, you look at these DBs and there's no more fear in their eyes in terms of him getting past them or, you know, even like creating any type of separation. And, you know, he's become, I would call, one of those second-tier tight ends. He's definitely not one of those guys I would put up on the top of my roster. The only problem is I wish I'd have knew this before the season started and before we had all of our drafts.
Yeah, you know, I know for so long he was rated that, but when I think of top receivers, you know, Julio and Antonio come to mind first, but then there's all these other receivers that pop in my mind before Dez was down. I just wanted your opinion on that because it seems like there's just something missing, and I thought it was just maybe me at one point. Next question for you. I know Carolina won yesterday. I know Cam is
banged up, you know, shoulder, ankle. I know he lost to Olsen for, you know, almost 12 weeks, 10 to 12 weeks with a broken foot. Should Carolina start thinking about maybe drafting a quarterback down the line? Because we know Cam has never been an accurate quarterback, but there were some balls yesterday that were just sailing. Last year he was banged up and there were some balls that were sailing. Are we looking at that great year that he had when he got to the Super Bowl as an anomaly, or should we start thinking, hey, maybe that was just his one great year, but all the other years with him running and scrambling, that's what we got, but we never really got a true quarterback.
I would agree with the latter part more than anything, Paul. You look at Cam, and he's never been like what you call one of those guys that like loves to sit in the pocket. You look at a Brady and even a Manning, those guys made their living from inside the pocket, obviously for different reasons, because like Peyton couldn't run out of sight in a day, and the same goes for Brady for the most part. Cam has gotten away with a lot of his inefficiencies as a quarterback because of his brute strength, his size, and being able to run. You know, those are great combinations, but he's never, in my opinion, developed into that great passer. And a little illustrated like this, he looks sometimes like he could throw a ball through a brick wall, but every pass can't be that pass. If you notice, like somebody like a Brady, there was a play that Brady made yesterday on a scramble, a loft on the run touch over the top to Gronkowski, who ended up catching it in stride, breaking the tackle. You know, Cam would try to throw that ball through the defender because he doesn't have that touch. And that's something that, you know, whether it was never developed or it's just has never been in him. Sometimes you fault the coaching staff for not kind of maybe doing more teaching and trying to bring him along and maybe trying to crush his ego a little bit, because sometimes you get a guy like him with all that talent, it's tough to tell them anything. So maybe he's just been uncoachable. But, you know, he's just, for me, he's never developed into that guy that you can sit back there in a pocket and pick a defense apart. And, you know, it's kind of what happens is, the late Danny Green said the best, you know, they are who they thought they are. And that's basically, Cam is who we think he is at this point in his career. And that one year, he happened to put it all together, and his team actually put it all together as well. So it all came together like a melodious verse. But now, like I say, you're seeing missing pieces, you know, tight end goes down. The rookie running back hasn't done much to this point. You know, he was like supposed to be the savior of all. And we're getting just more of what Cam is. And it's very sad. I mean, you look at what they did offensively this past weekend. That was another head scratcher to put, you know, 12 points on the board. I think they put, or nine. 9-6.
Nine to six.
I mean, that's unfathomable. I just can't imagine that type of struggle. But, you know, like I said, Cam has never developed into what I thought he would. And at this point in his career, like I said, he is who we all think he is.
Yeah, I agree. Can on the Kerry Lackey Law Line, the one and only Ed Smith, and can the Chargers find – I think they found all the ways to lose at the end of a game. Is there anything else they could do to lose at the end of the game with under 10 seconds left?
Paul, I think they're in a meeting right now trying to figure that out. They're actually trying to come up with another way. I mean, it looks like they're doing that stuff on purpose, doesn't it? I mean, they literally
yes.
– I mean, it's one thing to be snake bitten. It's one thing to have the snake bite you and then pick him up again and want to pet him. It's like, I don't know what it is with them, but like you said, they find all these different ways, and I'll be doggone if it doesn't look like they're trying. And, you know, that's not a bad way to start out when you're trying to, you know, you're building these new stadiums, you just moved out and left your home, you know, after 50-plus years, and you're trying to draw and attract fans to come watch you, and that's the best you can do, man. It might be a long tenure for them up there in L.A. And I don't know if you heard this one, Paul. You know they were charging people $100 for general parking?
Yes.
In L.A.? For that? Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, when you only have 30,000 seats, you can only charge so much for beer. So once you get up to $20 a beer, you got to add it somewhere else. And so
I guess parking
is where they're gonna get it. I mean, that's why I never cry about owners when they talk about this owner got fined. All they do is jack the prices up on you. It's easy. We need more revenue. Okay, change the hot dogs. They were 9. Make them 12. And you can't bring food in the stadium. You're not going to sit there for 4 hours and not eat. Inevitably, you're going to come off money. They charge $8-$9 for a bottle of water it costs maybe 2 cents, 3 cents to make. So they're making money hand over fist already. So I still think the Chargers moving was one of the more asinine moves. I'm with the fans. The fans in San Diego did not deserve to lose a team to go up 90 miles when no one in L.A. wanted them to begin with.
Exactly. It's a crime when you team that up, you know, the high prices and stuff like that. You team that up with a team that cannot, you know, win a football game. And they should, honestly, they should be sitting at 2-0, shouldn't they?
This is why, and I understand why football players hate kickers. This is why I understand that. I completely understand.
In that first game, though, he kicked it, made it, and then they didn't protect the middle of that middle of the formation, and they came through and blocked that second one. I put that on the offensive line more than I do him, and maybe he could have kicked it with a little more higher trajectory, but he made the first one. That second one got blocked. Yesterday was absolutely no excuse, zero excuse for wide right, none.
Oh boy. Should the Jets be upset that Marshawn Lynch was dancing his butt off yesterday in Oakland?
If you don't want him to dance, turn the music off, Paul. they gave that man a reason and the music to dance yesterday, and that was like their coming out party because that was their first home game, and all your man was doing was getting his groove on because he obviously didn't have much to worry about because they were running up and down the field on the Jets. And you know, like I said, it wasn't like he was out there on the field, though. He was doing it on the sideline. Like I said, if you don't want him to dance, don't give him a reason to dance.
I agree. I hate when I hear that. they throw it in our face. You lost. Well, they're rubbing it in. You lost. Period. You lost. The winning team gets to do whatever they want to do. I go back to T.O. with that. If you didn't want T.O. to celebrate, keep him out of the end zone.
Very true. We all know there's certain things that go across the line, but for the most part, like I said, and I do like that they've allowed some of these, you know, the celebrations. They've kind of loosened up on those. I've seen a couple good ones to start the season out.
Oh, I love the basketball one.
That was my favorite one. That was my favorite one. I love that.
On the Kerry Lackey Law line with us, the one and only Ed Smith. Host of Ed Smith Speaks over on 1060 every Saturday from 10 till 12. Two quick ones. How much trouble is Seattle in?
Paul, I mean, they built their foundation on defense, but your offense has to chip in at least a little bit. And through the first 2 weeks, I mean, they look as pedestrian as you can. And thank goodness for the defense they put out there yesterday to hold, you know, San Francisco of all teams to what they did, but they could be 0-2 as well, and I have no confidence in them moving forward in terms of turning it around. They look very average at best, and what I guess where they're lucky is the division that they happen to fall in. If the Cardinals are going to play the way they play, San Francisco kind of rebuilding, and the Rams are, you know, I think it's one of those things, man, where the luckiest thing they could have is they're at the NFC West.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham doesn't – you talk about people that just father time catching up with. I mean, he's still relatively young, but he seems to have lost all of his skill just coming over to Seattle. I mean, he no longer even looks like a top 10, 15 tight end, let alone a top 2 or 3.
Hey, you know, some of that comes to utilization, because with the Saints, he was like Superman. They created – mismatches for him, just like they do in New England with Gronk. They actually went out of their way to create things specifically for him. When he got to Seattle, they pretty much just said, hey, conform and roll into our offense. And they basically have turned him into an average tight end. And that's just my opinion, because like I said, they're not using the tool that they have. And then, you know, some of it comes with, you know, him being exposed maybe because, you know, he maybe was so he was highlighted over there in New Orleans, and now, you know, some of the discovery is maybe his skills aren't as, you know, diverse as we thought. But I think it rolls more toward the fact that Seattle pretty much has just – they've kind of converted him to an average guy. If you took him right now, Paul, ask yourself this. If you took him right now, gave him back to Drew Brees in New Orleans, I guarantee he would return to some type of form. That's just my opinion again.
And you know what? That's asinine because Pete Carroll is a good coach. If you're going to trade Max Unger, one of the better linemen in the league, for a guy, you would think you want to use his explosiveness. The one thing that, and you're 100% right, New Orleans used to split him out so much, he wanted to get wide receiver pay. And here is, and it's not like Seattle has this you know, plethora of all-star Pro Bowl receivers. Why, I'm surprised that they're not putting him in those positions to spread out and get lined up against a safety where he can box out. Now, the one thing about him, though, I forget exactly what player, it kind of exposed that he's not the toughest guy in the world. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people are getting more physical with him because they know he's not the toughest guy in the world.
Yeah, you're pinpoint on there. And I think one of the things that if you look back to his New Orleans days and you look what they do with Gronkowski and even with Kelce over in Kansas City, there's a lot of diversity in what they do, meaning you can never pinpoint where they're going to be. They put him in motion. They put him in all these crazy formations. They actually, you know, Kelce scored on a shovel pass this past weekend. They're doing all these creative things to take advantage of that size and athleticism. Whereas, like I said, in Seattle, I mean, you can pretty much just spot where he comes out. He lines up. And like you said, the teams are teeing off on him because he's not as physical as everybody probably thought he was. But when you're stationary like that, it's so easy for them to chip you before you can get out or put a man over you or do certain things to make his life a living hell on the inside of that formation. And that's what teams have figured out, and that's what they're doing.
I'll tell you one team that I had faith in, and they're rewarding me. It's your old team, the Falcons. Now, I know they don't always play well on the road, but when you get them at home, that's a completely different team. And if they get home field throughout again, Ed, I don't think they're going to have Super Bowl hangover. To me, they are the best team in the NFC.
They did look really good yesterday. Where they come in a suspect for me, like you said, is on the road and playing outside of that dome. So we'll see. It's too early in the season. A great game against Green Bay last night. And, you know, it's one of those things that, well, you give me a couple more weeks and then we get into the later part of the year where weather and stuff comes into effect. If they can correct some of those issues they've had in the past, they, you know, and then, like you said, people have to go to that dome to play, which, by the way, looks really, really pretty. And I'm looking forward to getting over there sometime this year to see it. That was quite the sight, that doggone dome that they put together. They'll be tough to beat there for sure.
Well, you know it's going to be tight if it's built by Mercedes-Benz. I mean, they already build ridiculous cars, so now they're in the stadium building business. So, I guess every seat is going to be a front row seat in the Benz, huh?
Yeah. I wonder what the now. Here's my question: what are they going to do with the old dome? Are they going to leave that one up there, or are they supposed to be not blowing that one up?
I haven't, but, you know, I felt old last night because I even said to my wife, I said, you know what, I'm old enough to remember them playing in Fulton County Stadium, and then got a dome, and now they outplayed that dome and then another dome. How old am I?
They jumped out of the Georgia Dome really fast, though, because that thing was only about 20 years and maybe some change. So what made them get out of there that quickly when, like I said, there was absolutely nothing wrong with it was beyond me, but – yeah, that's a quick hook on a stadium for sure. And I go back to when I was still playing. Obviously, I played in that one, but I remember playing the old Vet Stadium in Philly. And that one should have been blown up about 30 years before they did blow it up, but they still had that one standing up. So, like I said, they got quick hooks on these stadiums. Now it's all about that money now.
You're not lying. I remember when the Braves played at Fulton County Stadium, and they're through another. Maybe it's just Atlanta, because they've already played out Turner Field and they're in a new stadium.
Yeah,
maybe it's just Atlanta.
Because
they're swapping these stadiums.
Quick, fast, and hurry.
You ain't lying. Injuries. Now, I already said about Olsen. Atlanta lost Vic Beasley, looks like, for a month or two with the torn hamstring. How much do you think it's going to impact their business over the next 2 months, or do you think they can play through that until he can get back on the field?
You know, that's a tricky one. I think they'll be okay. The Falcons aren't necessarily predicated on their defense. They're the defensive side of the ball. They're pretty much tasked just to slow the other team down, get the ball back so the offense can, you know, get out there and fire it up. So, you know, if this was Seattle, like a key member of Seattle, the way their offensive plays has been playing, I should say, I would feel a lot more concerned with the Falcons. Like I said, you got Julio Jones, Freeman, Coleman, you know, the tight end who's been giving them some good play. I mean, the offense is going to run their organization. It'll take a little bit away from them, but I'm not thinking it's going to be that much of a difference. Their game plan is going to stay the same.
And then the last football question for you I have, Ed, is about my team. I've already done my crying, so I'm good. But I understand this process. I really do. And it's the first time where I'm not looking at them to win every week, but I'm looking at the young players and hopefully seeing glimpses and seeing where they can get better. But you know the Bears are going to go to Mitch Trubisky this year at some point. How much time do you think, or how much from what you've seen in NFL, when is the right time? How much film study and looking at game speed does a quarterback need to step in? Is it the first 5 games and then he comes in? The first 8 games and then he comes in? A lot of people in Chicago are saying, well, once the season looks like it's officially over, that's when they'll go to him. But it looked like it was officially over yesterday for me, because there is nothing that I'm seeing that says the Bears can rebound and somehow sneak into the playoffs. Just not enough talent. So when do you think the Bears make that move and get a look-see at what Mitchell Trubisky has?
Well, see, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of factors that go into this, because, one, what the thing that the organization wants the most, and I say organization, I mean like the front office who drafted him and the coaching staff, one, they don't want to throw him on top of a burning building, for one. They want him to go in there and have some success for nothing else, to show the rooting fans, the public, you know, the supporters, that, hey, we did make the correct choice, and this is our future. You don't want to throw him out there and have him struggle. And some of that comes with watching him in practice, maybe, you know, extra coaching in and out of the film room. And the other thing that they will look at, believe it or not, Paul, is the schedule. Like, if you've got Murderer's Row coming up right now, say, for instance, right now, and I haven't looked at the Bears' schedule, but if you had the I don't know, Packers, the Seattle defense, Denver defense, that a Murderer's Row coming up, the last thing you want to do is throw that rookie out there, for at least in my opinion, knowing that he's probably not going to have a lot of success. So what they're probably doing, they're probably pacing him a little bit. And what you might see is, as they get into some of these games, like yesterday, I thought would have been the perfect opportunity late in the game, when obviously it was just a massacre, maybe get him a series or two or something like that. Not necessarily want to start controversy, but just start slowly in, you know, like getting him in there so he can get his feet wet. And some people say, well, he had the whole preseason. Preseason football, you know this, Paul, is nothing compared to regular season.
No.
The speed, and you're playing against the number ones and the schemes and the things you've never seen before in your life. They start game planning for you. That's the last place you want your rookie quarterback deer in the headlights look. So I think what they'll do is they'll quietly – and the other factor is, you gave Glennon all this doggone money. How stupid do you look if you pull him this early in the season? So, one, they're going to try to get a little tread out of Glennon, and they also will bring him along, Trubisky, slow enough to try to build his confidence, so when they finally do make that move, they never have to look back. And it might be – you know, you might go a few weeks into the season, but I guarantee you, like, the conversations have already started, and they're trying to pick. They're like a good game of hopscotch, trying to pick their spot to jump in, or double dutch, I should say. They're trying to pick their spot to dump him in there. So, you know, I almost want to send you yesterday I want to send you an emoji hug, because I knew what you were going through. But rest assured, man, all things come to those who wait. So,
You know, I've been waiting since 85. So when you talk about that schedule, I understand, because up next are the Steelers, then the Packers,
mm-hmm.
then the Vikings,
yep.
then the Ravens, then the Panthers. All those defenses are tricky. Now, I say if there's any game to throw them in, I think it's here week 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. Week 8, you're going to to New Orleans, and they don't play defense at all. So maybe that's the week where you give them a shot, because they can't play defense to save their life. So maybe then, or they play the Browns down the line. So maybe that's another team that you see what he can do. But, and listen, I want to ask you something about college football real quick, but I got a caller. Want to get to him. He's been patient. He's been holding on for a second here. So want to see who it is and what they got to say real quick.
Absolutely.
Hey, caller, thank you for holding. Who do I have on the line? You're with PLR and the one only Ed Smith.
Good afternoon. This is Lou from Jersey.
Hey, how you doing, Lou?
All right. Well, anyway, what went wrong with Dallas yesterday? I mean, you know, they were coming in, you know, off a good win from the Giants last week, and then they just fell apart. Was it their offense? Was it their defense? I mean, ugh.
First off, thank you for holding. Looking, yes, it was their offense, it was their defense, it was their special teams, it was their coaching. You are right on. Yes, it was everything. The defense is not as good as build. To be honest with you, their defense is predicated on their offense controlling the ball, and their offense did not control the ball yesterday. Ed, what do you say?
You know, for me, it was one. Lack of a game plan coming in, or a good game plan coming in, and then the inability to make adjustments in game. When you and I were talking about this earlier, Paul, it's one of those things where you came in and you saw what wasn't working, but they continued. You would not be able to tell what they were doing. They did the same thing from first quarter all the way through the fourth, and, you know, you can't stay with that doing, you know, throughout the game. You have to be able to make adjustments. They made none. And Denver smacked him in the mouth from opening series all the way through the end of the game.
So that's what happened to him.
Yeah. And of course, I think the delay might have, you know, affected their flow of the game. Anyway, you know, that lightning delay. I mean, because sometimes that can really mess a team up. I know
it,
know
it can,
do,
but remember.
But remember,
both teams had that same delay. And one still came out with the fire and ready to perform, and the other one came out, as they had said, really lackluster. They just didn't seem ready to play. And to be honest with you, if you don't seem ready to play, yeah, that's players, but that's also coaching, I think. You got to have your guys ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's no excuse, but, you know, sometimes it does, you know, shut down a team's momentum.
They can.
I actually think Denver had the momentum going into the delay. So, if anything, because they had already scored and they had just missed that field goal, so it should have been up 10-0, but they missed that field goal. They were the ones who actually had the momentum. So, I thought it would be more, you know, if somebody was going to lose it, it would have been Denver coming out of the locker room. But they, like I said, they held on and pretty much just they played what I would call the perfect game plan against Dallas.
Yeah,
yep.
Just my rotten luck. I'm a Cowboy fan.
Say that again, Luke.
What can I say? I'm a Cowboy fan.
What part of Jersey are you from?
I'm actually from the northern area, just outside of Newark.
Okay. I was born and raised in South Jersey, so I'll some time. Born in Trenton. We moved to a little town called Browns Mills, not too far from Fort Dix McGuire Air Force Base and Cherry Hill and all that.
There it is. I've heard of
yep.
it.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're in, and are you still in Jersey now, or?
No, Paul and I are both in Arizona.
Wow. Arizona.
Yes, sir.
I'll go buy you a cactus plant for Christmas.
Oh, there you go.
I appreciate it.
What do you think the Cardinals are going to do for the rest of the year? Where do you see that?
I've got them at
you
six and I got them at either 6-10, 7-9. No, David Johnson really, I think, impacts them.
So a sub 500 record.
Yes.
I can,
unless
yeah,
they show
I
something completely different.
Yeah,
unless they show something completely different.
Yeah, they said the same thing.
Hey, look,
Jets to go like 2-14.
They're gonna a two. That's two victories too many.
That's a lot.
Hey, I'm sorry. I haven't seen anything that says they can win right now. Hey, listen, we're coming up against time. I appreciate your support, and hopefully we'll have you back on really soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thanks.
Nice
take care
now.
All righty.
Right.
So, Ed, we really are coming against the time, but I got two quick questions to ask you before we get out of here. One, did you see that fight?
You know, I didn't. I've only heard about it. Get it, but I've heard about all the controversy and everything. Did you watch it?
I did, and I don't know what that judge was smoking. Adelaide, whatever her name is, I don't know what she was smoking. I don't know what she was watching. She must have been blind. But here's the one thing that everyone seems to be forgetting. She scored at 118-110, and they'll show it free next week, so check it out, and then we'll talk about it more. But
okay,
but let's just say she saw 115-113. It's still a draw. The scoring part was off, but if she gave it to Canelo, you could say, ooh, wow, that's close, but you could almost still see that. So to me, the 118-110, that's the issue, the difference in the points, but not if she had saw that Canelo won. Hopefully that makes sense the way I'm saying it, because it just the score was off, but it's still a draw. I hate draws. To me, if I spend money and watch a draw, I've just wasted my time and everything. I don't want to see a draw, not in boxing. And in boxing, there's a winner, and there's always a winner. It's never even. So I'm not the biggest fan of Oscar anyway, but I think there should be an independent council that chooses judges, not the promoters.
I'm with you, and I think the biggest thing for everybody was the discrepancy, like the gap in her scoring. Like you said, even if it was 115-113, same difference. I think it was the gap in her scoring, like, it's almost like how can you see something that looked like this when everybody else saw something that looked closer to this? So, you know, I'm with you in terms of I haven't been the biggest boxing fan for years. If I had paid my money, I'd have been very disappointed in the outcome. I'm with you. I don't like draws as well. But the rematch is going to be teed up. We'll be back at it, and I just hope somebody is smart enough not to have that woman anywhere near the scoring table for the second time around.
She needs to go back to judging amateur bouts that last four rounds. And then did you see what's happening with these big schools? And I'm happy that it's happening to them. They're scheduling these smaller schools that they think they can get an easy win, ship this money to them, and everything is going to go great. Nebraska got punched in the mouth by the Northern Illinois University Huskies. They're now 4-1 against the Big Ten in the last 5 years. So maybe the Big Ten, if they're looking for a patsy, they may want to take Northern Illinois off their schedule.
Absolutely. I love it when those little schools beat up on the big boys too. It looks like a money grab when they schedule those. But those boys on the other side of the field, I mean, they get their scholarships and they pull their pants on just like everybody else does. And these bigger schools better start realizing and recognizing that you're not, you know, just because your name is Nebraska doesn't mean anything. And I love to see those upsets. Like it all started a few years ago with Appalachian State against Michigan, remember?
Yep, I sure do. I sure went in the big house and embarrassed the hell out of them. We're at a minute and five there, but I got to ask you this. Today, on First Take, Stephen A. Smith asked Kyrie Irving, did he tell LeBron he was leaving? He said no. Stephen A. said, well, why didn't you? He said, well, do I have to? What do you think about Kyrie saying, I don't owe him any explanation?
Well, that just shows the iciness of their relationship, because if they had a good relationship, there would have been better communication. So that's all that shows. And as far as anything else, yeah, he's a grown man. You don't have to ask his permission or anything. No, it's crazy.
And I said it earlier, but tell everyone where they can listen to you at.
Easy Sports Talk is on every Saturday from 10 to 12 on KDUS, NBC Sports 1060 AM. The website is edsmithspeaks.com. At Twitter, edsmithspeaks.com. Same thing for Instagram.
Show is killer. You and Jimmy be killing it. And then, of course, this is The Cave Show. You can get us at The Sports Cave on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook fan page, There's a sportscave.com. Go check that out. Cave is always with a K. You can get me directly at PLR Sports. Thank you, my brother, for hanging with me. And all the Cave Show with PLR. And we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, Paul.
When my back's against the ropes, I can feel it.